Alright guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, somewhere in the 160th episode area.
163, I believe.
Yeah, I got a couple that I got to release before this, so maybe this is 165.
Okay.
Guys, we are a value-for-value production, so anything that you could contribute to the show, time, talent, treasure, is much appreciated, and most likely we'll go back into the show or go towards pig feed. And a couple people have been reaching out, offering some new theme songs, and people have been emailing me. Guys, I like to hear emails from you. Send me emails at deborahgetsredpilled@pm.me. Sir Mount Shasta, Adam from Redding, California, emails me like 3 times a day. So
Wow. Everybody
should do that. He gives me show ideas, gives me good questions to ask. And anything that you can contribute, whatever value you're getting out of the show, you know, maybe it's $1 an episode. If everybody did that, I'd have a little bit more money. But other than that, guys, we are brought to you by the Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Tony Arterburn's doing it over there in Branson, Missouri. Check him out if you're in the area at his brick and mortar store, or go check them out online at deborahgetsredpilled.gold. That's our affiliate link. If you want to get onto the Wolf Pack, which is their monthly subscription service, you will have physical gold shipped to you every month by Tony or Kinsey. And let them do all the heavy lifting and just get physical gold every month, some sort of precious metal. They have subscription-based memberships over there, starting at $50 a month and going up from there. So start changing your money immediately out of cash and put it into physical assets, whether that's tools, precious metals, you know. The one thing you shouldn't do, don't pay off your mortgage, you know, because that'll always be there. That'll always be the same. They can't raise that on you unless they really pull some fun stuff. But guys, get your money out of those Luciferian bankster notes, as Tony calls them. And yeah, and if you use our affiliate link, deborahgetsredpilled.gold, you will we'll get a little kickback. I don't think we've gotten anything yet, so maybe you can be the first one. Let us know if you are. We'd really appreciate it. I think that's all the business, Deborah. What's going on with you?
Not too much. Same old. It's just another glorious day in the Bay Area, weather-wise, anyway.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it was really nice here today, too. Sunny and crisp and cold and sunny. And it's like my favorite weather, I think. It's when it's cold and it's bright out. The sky's been clear.
Yeah.
Hasn't been overcast. And when we can get that anytime outside of the summer here, that's a big deal for us. And we've had some really nice weather, like I said. And it's going to rain a little bit. And then I think it's going to get nice again for Thanksgiving in 3 days.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you're going to have a house full.
Yeah, we're going to have a bunch of people. We're going to be missing you guys. But it's been all day getting the house prepared. Went to the dump and had some cleaners come over. Professional house cleaners just came and finished up. They did a great job.
Nice.
They recognized me from 12-step meetings.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. If you guys are getting your house cleaned by cleaners, they're probably in AA or NA, so, you know, or are on their way there. But, and then I just cleaning up the property, moving stuff around, throwing trash away. And, I got a big truckload full of metal that I'm going to go dump in the metal bins at the dump tomorrow. So, getting it done. And Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. It's a little bit stressful having a bunch of people come over, but it's what I like, and I'm really looking forward to it. So I went and got prepared and got all the food that we need. Got a turkey. Turkey was $50. So everything's expensive, you know.
How many pounds is it?
13 organic. So it was pretty expensive. But yeah, and yeah, so it's gonna be a good day. Got your other daughter's coming over, and some friends, my old jujitsu friends are
Oh,
coming
cool.
over, and they're good friends with Emily now too, so it's nice.
Oh, great.
And then oh yeah, my sister's coming
Your
over.
sister and
My
her
sister
family.
and her two kids and her husband are coming up from California. I think they'll be here tomorrow. I don't know. Who knows?
Cool.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah,
So,
I'm sorry I'm missing out on everybody.
yeah, that's just the way it goes. You'll be able to be up here sometime soon. So, yeah. And other than that, that's it. Just staying
That's
busy.
it.
Worked all last week. I think I'm gonna go to work
Yeah.
again next week. It's cool.
That's great.
I really enjoy doing home remodel stuff and like carpentry, rough carpentry. It's something I think I would have been good at, you know.
Oh,
I'm
I.
glad. I'm glad I never. I'm glad, you know, everything worked out the way it did right now. I'm glad I don't own my own, you know, construction company, and I'm glad I'm sitting at home, you know, fixing this place up. But I think I would have been a good at that stuff. And
I think you would also. I have no doubt.
yeah, it's just so much more enjoyable, like doing a construction job on a house with like two other guys than being on a union job site. Man, it sucks so bad. I have like a visceral reaction when I drive through Portland. Now I look over the bridge. When I drive over the bridge, I see the big hotel that I was working on when I quit. And man, it makes me sick to my stomach to think about ever having to go back there and do that. I'm like,
Yeah, I would think just seeing the product of your labor, you know, like you would in a home project,
yeah, it's pretty
must be
cool.
so gratifying.
Yeah, I went on I started on Monday, and they had a couple, you know, they had all the walls framed in and stuff like that. There was no roof. They're doing a big addition on this house. And like there's like two parts of the house that they're joining together, two separate parts that they're joining together. And we put up all the rafters and then got the whole roof on, not the finished roof, but got it all the plywood on the roof, you know. So I'm saying, you know, a lot. I'll work on it.
I didn't
And
notice. It's okay.
I notice when I listen back. But yeah, it's really cool to see it finished at the end. It seems so much bigger once we got all the plywood up and everything like that. So it's
Was it
cool.
two separate homes that they're combining, or they just had like a
They had some little separate, I think they had a separate room that was kind of the,
studio or some such?
yeah, I think they had all their laundry and stuff in there. So
Yeah.
cool.
Nice.
Other than that, what else is going on?
Went into the city on Saturday with Pia, my friend Pia.
Yeah.
Saw a show.
Yeah, what a play.
No, a band,
Who'd you see?
Arcade Fire.
Arcade Fire, your favorite.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was great. It was a good show. They played a long time. I was a little concerned because the lead guy there has been in the news. Evidently, he was messing around on his wife, who is also a band member. So,
Of the same band.
And they had scheduled a couple of, you know, opening acts. I can't remember the first one. The second one was Beck, and they
Oh, Beck.
both withdrew because they couldn't,
Scientologist.
yeah, didn't want to be affiliated with a home, you know,
A home wrecker.
a home wrecker.
Wow.
But
Interesting.
it was sold out. So
Yeah. Cool.
City's looking grim as usual.
Really? Where was the show at?
Bill Graham.
Yeah, it's always been real gross down there.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I used to ride the bus to jujitsu every day from our old apartment. I can't believe, man, the bus was so gross. And then you ride it down Market Street. I get off at 8th and Market, and then walk down to Howard Street. That's where my jujitsu gym was. Health Gracie's, San Francisco. And yeah, and then I'd take a shower, walk back up to the bus stop, and sit on a stinky bus or stand on a stinky bus for a couple stops until I got home. I take the bus to work. I take the bus home. Life's a lot different
Oh boy.
now.
I just started this book that I think you would really like, and I'm intending to give it to Eric also. It is called 4,000 Weeks, and it is by Oliver Berkman,
What's it
and
about?
it's about how we spend our time. An average lifespan is 4,000 weeks, and I'm just starting chapter two now, but it's about how, the more proficient we become about managing time, the more we take on. And it just escalates until, most of us are running around with our, never really accomplishing what we're meant to accomplish,
Yeah,
which
cool.
is to enjoy friends, family, life,
That's what it's
nature.
all about. Yeah. Are you reading it or listening to it?
I'm listening to it, but I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, I usually do that if I really like it. I'm listening to Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis right now. And it's really good. Guys, if you have kind of if you have are Christianity curious like I was, and maybe you have a little base in Christianity, not much at all, or you can remember some from when you were little, you had a bad experience, but this last 2.5 years has left you in a spot where you feel like you want some spirituality. Go check out this book, Mere Christianity, by C.S. Lewis. It was written in the 40s, and it's incredible. He was an Anglican, which is a Protestant Church of England, and it doesn't get into any fighting over different forms of theology in Christianity. It's just a highly I don't even know how to explain it. If your brain works kind of like mine in this libertarian, logical fashion, it's a fantastic book. And I'd recommend it to anybody. The thing that turns me off the most about all this stuff is different people who are a certain form of Christianity arguing why theirs is right and other people's is wrong. It's the biggest turnoff for me. It's almost as bad for me as someone arguing for like atheism or something like that. It's just it I don't like it, and I know I probably made the mistake of trying to, maybe made some remarks when I first started talking about it, but I'm never gonna do that. I don't want to debate what I'm doing with anybody or anything like that. A lot of people that are really good at it know a lot do. Jay Dyer does it all the time. But yeah, I just don't see the need for me to do it, and I don't really need anybody to like preach to me about why I'm wrong and they're right,
Isn't, I mean, the different, what would you call it, a sect of religion, different sects of Christianity, aren't they prime, I mean, fundamentally the same? Aren't they?
I guess they would be fundamentally the same in that they, like again, I can't really get into it, but they're, you believe in Jesus Christ is the fundamental similarities of it. But I think it goes off and gets pretty different from there, you know.
Coming from a person who knows very, very little.
Yeah, and then people get tripped up on all sorts of little stuff, a couple different words here and there, and that got changed in a prayer, you know, and people went to a war over it. It's things like that, you know. So it's everybody's kind of doing on their own path, and yeah, I'm really happy with the one I'm on right now. It's really fun for me to learn, and I do catechism every Thursday night, and it's like an hour long of the priest at my church talking about what the heck's going on. And I never thought that I would enjoy something like that. It's highly enlightening for me. So I'm really liking it. And yeah, every week they explain a little bit more, and just stuff that's going on around it, in the liturgy and the service that we do. And it all makes a lot of sense to me. So the way that the place I choose to go to does it. So pretty cool.
Very
But
cool.
yeah. And let's see what else. Don't know. I sent a invite to our guests. Let's see if I should send another one. Let's pause.
Okay.
Okay, guys, we're back and we're here with our guest. It's been a long time coming, rescheduling, scheduling, getting it all done, forgetting to return emails, getting emailed because of it. And I'm happy it's happening. But our guest today is Rebecca from the Dissident Mama podcast. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're really happy to have you here. So you are let me see if I can get all this right. You're a mother to boys, you're a wife. You're an Orthodox Christian who founded your church. You're a homeschooler. You're a retired mainstream journalist. And most importantly, well, maybe not most important, but you are a recovering feminist, socialist, atheist.
Correct.
Those are all very interesting things. And I think, yeah, I think I'm recovering. I don't know if I ever would have called myself a feminist, but I am definitely got tricked into some commie atheism back in my day. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about all that stuff with you. Is there anything I left out that you want to just introduce yourself to everybody real quick? Proponent.
Yeah. I like Southern without apology.
Yeah.
That's kind of a good thing. And I'm here in my overalls that they can see, so it's like official. I'm super Southern. I've been doing yard work and burning leaves and weatherproofing my front deck. So yeah, Southern without apology, but all that stuff kind of blends together. But I'd say the most important thing would be Orthodox Christian, and from that everything else flows. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, let's just I guess we can talk a little bit about how you got to where you're at.
Yeah, from
And
atheism to Orthodox Christianity.
yeah, it's a fun trip. And I think that you've had so many good guests on your show that I've heard you talk to, like Ryan Dawson and Rachel Wilson from Occult Feminism. That was a great show that you guys did together. We tried to get her on, but she's taking a break till the new year. Hopefully we can get her after that. But Deborah and I both read her book, and it's great. But yeah, where did you start out? You went to yeah, let's get into your old feminist socialist days.
Okay. Well, it took me 10 years to get my bachelor's. So you were saying it was a fun trip, and I used to be a deadhead, so it is a long, strange trip it has been.
Were you still, so you were a deadhead while Jerry Garcia was still alive?
Correct.
Okay.
In
Did you
fact,
ever go to Eugene, Oregon?
I did not,
Okay.
but I saw them almost 90 times. I think it was
Whoa.
89-ish, 88, something like that. But I had stopped seeing the Dead before Jerry died because it was just kind of a train wreck at the end. It was one of those things that, every fifth show was like good. And, you're going to all this trouble and taking time off work to try to get to the shows. And
It's a lot
like,
of miracles.
yeah, part like early 90s, it was like right on. But anyway, long story short, I took my time getting my bachelor's degree, figuring out if I even wanted to go to college. And it was actually within my travels around the US and partying and being wild and all this kind of thing that I actually discovered my love of writing. And I had always been a pretty good English student in high school, but never thought about being a writer. And it was wanting to write about music and these musical experiences, many of them drug-induced, that I discovered my love of writing. And then I decided, well, I want to go to college. I want to be a journalist. I want to save the world, right? I didn't want to report facts. I wanted to save the world. Rush Limbaugh used to always joke about that with about journalists that they want to save the world, and really their job is to just, give information. So anyway, I was hook, line, sinker into that whole kind of thing. And that's when I decided I wanted to go to a serious journalism school. And then that's when I went to the University of Wisconsin. So I graduated 10 years. I got my bachelor's 10 years after I left high school. So it was a 10-year long drawn out journey. But yeah, that's what I did. Got my bachelor's there and then went into just mainstream journalism. Yeah.
Where did you go to work after you graduated?
I worked at the Gazette in Colorado Springs. I worked at the Watauga Democrat in Boone, North Carolina. The Greensboro News and Record in Greensboro, North Carolina. I also had some like did some like music journalism stuff too, like interspersed within that. But that was, I guess that's considered mainstream, but it's more like niche. But like daily newspaper stuff, those were the publications. And then writing, of course. And then I got into newspaper design, which has helped me with doing website stuff. So that's what I did.
Yeah. When you first graduated high school and went away to college, where were you at politically, socially, all that?
So when I first graduated high school, and what was the second part of it?
Where were you at like politically and socially?
Okay. So graduated high school, just kind of nothing, I was raised by Reagan Republicans, so there were some conservative-ish undertones to my upbringing. But the way I explain it is, my parents taught me lots of good things, never to tell a lie, to have a good work ethic and things like this, but they didn't prepare me. And I think this was because it was the 80s. I graduated high school in 89, but it was a much simpler time. Even if you think, oh, my daughter's going to go off to college or go do this thing, she may become a liberal, not a leftist. And I think there's a difference. She may become a liberal, but she'll come back, right? The whole like Winston Churchill quote, if you're not a liberal when you're young, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative when you're older, you don't have a brain, or whatever the exact quote was, I forget, but it's kind of one of
Yeah.
those things. Like the pendulum will go that way, but you'll come back. But this was the 90s, and a lot of this stuff was just really ratcheting up, like a generation after the 1960s. And when I got to my varied college campuses, I went to quite a few schools before I, like I said, during my traveling days, but before I really got to UW, a smattering of liberalishness here and there. But UW was like, I thought I was seeing the truth for the first time. And it was really this, I felt like it was the first time I'd ever heard these things so consistently from every corner of where I worked. To my neighbors, to every class I took, walking your dog down the street or whatever, everything was immersed in this, just really steeped in this leftism, not just liberalism, very hardcore leftism. And I just thought I'd been lied to my whole life because I was hearing things I'd never heard before. You know, I think now if a kid goes to college, that could be a huge mistake, but also a smart parent could say, these are the lies you're going to be told. This is how you can protect yourself. This is how you can push back against the inundation of misinformation or propaganda or whatever. But then it was just, oh, go get your degree and have fun, you know, see ya. And I was just a sponge. I was just a sponge because I was seeking truth. I already kind of had these feminist tendencies. Just, you know, not from my high schooling or from my parents. I think it's just part of being raised in America, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And I think still my husband jokes sometimes, half jokes, that I still have feminist tendencies because it's just immersed in our feminine social structure. You know, everything's so feminized and you don't even really think about it. You didn't back then. Now it's kind of beating you over the head, but I was just a sponge for it. So I just took it all in, you know, took the ball and ran with it. And off I went and minored in women's studies and all that.
Yeah. Can you remember what the big issue, social issue was in the early 90s? What was the biggest one?
Oh man, maybe abortion. I don't know. I don't really remember. I mean, I just remember being angry about a lot of things, even though things were pretty good. I don't know. Newt Gingrich, everybody hated him. Everybody loved Bill Clinton. People wanted to put on their presidential knee pads and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, I don't really remember exactly what people were griping about back then. Just environmentalism, I guess, you know.
Yeah. I was in college in the late 90s and early 2000s. And I was in college during 9/11. So that was a big one. Yeah, I can't really remember what it was. Probably middle of the road. Republicanism now would have been the leftism of the day.
Yeah.
When
you say things were feminized, can you give an example so I have a better understanding?
Back then or now?
Back then, when you said that or I don't know what, if you were referring to now or then,
yeah.
You said that everything was becoming feminized.
Well, like the whole girl power, you know, you go girl kind of thing was happening then. Like I said, I was into music a lot. I worked at a music store. And even though I was a hippie, like, you know, I liked punk music and the whole like
riot punk girl
aesthetic, Riot Girl was really coming into the fore, you know, and like people were, you know, when they were going to punk shows back then, you know, people were doing the mosh pit and it was big burly guys like bumping into each other. So there was this whole thing happening within that whole scene of there were punk girls who wanted it to be not touchy feely, but they certainly didn't want to get beaten up in a mosh pit. So that kind of thing, you know, not, I think it's really having, not letting men have a space that's only like a men only space. I think that was becoming like more and more of the thing then. And I think also like man hating, like I called myself, like I didn't think I liked men back then, but like most of my friends were dudes. So it's like, that was one of the many contradictions that I was doing in my life. I'm like, supposed to hate men, but like, you know, men are awesome. But I think it was one of those things of having these like female only inclusive spaces, like the books that I bought for my women's studies classes were a bookstore called A Room of One's Own. And it was a female, you know, it was a feminist bookstore. And yeah, I guess guys could go in there, but it's like the Portlandia episode.
Was it like the one on Portlandia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like that, you know, and, you know, just pointing was too phallic for them and all this kind of thing. So, yeah, I think it's just kind of, it was putting that out there and making it seem normal to me, but all the weird things that happened on college campuses that, you know, my dad and Rush Limbaugh used to laugh about, you know, are now everywhere. You know, it used to be confined to the college campuses. And I think it's just some of those things. And now people are way more comfortable about being unapologetically pro-woman, which can be okay in a certain context, but very unapologetically anti-man. So I think it's one of those things that it was like encapsulated on the college campus, but now you see that everywhere at the public library and whatever, church, all sorts of places.
Yeah. I mean, the closest city to me is Portland, Oregon. So yeah.
There, you know.
Yeah. What else you got, Deborah?
Well, thanks. I just wanted to, before we got too far into it, I wanted to just understand that a little better.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, Rebecca, that there's a difference between leftism and progressivism. Is that what you said, the two?
I think like liberal.
Yeah, liberalism and leftism. Mm-hmm. What's the distinction to you?
And I guess I would say leftism and progressivism are kind of the same thing. To me, I see those as synonyms. But liberal would be, oh, I want to recycle. Oh, I might want to drive a Prius. You know, I want my granddaughter to have all the opportunities that straight white men have. You know, just kind of like equality in this, you know, kind of broad sense, like a fair shake, right? You just want clean water to drink and everybody to have like equal access to things. I think that is a naive thing because that leads to the other things, and it is absolutely not what is happening today. But I think like a liberal, you could have a conversation with. A liberal probably doesn't want to send you to a gulag where a leftist or a progressive would. The shriekers, the people who plug their ears and have the meltdowns, those would be like the progressives or the people that immediately go to an ad hom, you're a Nazi, you're a white supremacist. That would be a progressive / leftist. A liberal might say, hey, I disagree with you, but we can have this conversation. I think those people like have good intentions and good hearts a lot of times, but maybe they're getting bad information or only hearing half of the story, you know, but they may be open to discussion.
Yeah. Like Deborah.
Like me.
Yeah. There we go.
we had Pete Quinones on our last show, and that one got a little close to the sun for her, I think. But
I listened to a part of it, so I'll have to get to the sun scorching part.
Yeah. Why do you think I'm asking a lot of questions. Maybe we'll get into a little more of a discussion later. Why do you think that this like hardcore progressivism has become so in vogue over the past, you know, what, 10, 15 years?
Well, and do you see it? Are you seeing it split between political parties, or just we're not using politics in this description at all? I mean, when you say the leftists.
Okay. Are you saying like, are there leftists in the Republican Party?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Let me clarify.
Yes. Well, there's kind of, I guess, remind me of your question, Adam, and let me take Deborah's, I guess, first. There's kind of the uniparty thing where, you know, there's always the loyal opposition. You know, somebody wants to, you know, do a Hail Mary, some kind of crazy legislation, you know, you can marry your dog, whatever. There's the Hail Mary. Oh, well, then the other side will say, well, we don't want you to marry your dog, but, and then there'll be some kind of compromise and bipartisanship and people shaking hands across the aisle. And everybody's like, that's a good thing. You know, this is a democracy in action, but it will be just getting inching further to whatever I know what I said is hyperbolic, but in 2 years, it's probably going to be happening. But anyway, you know, it's one of those things that I'm an unaffiliated voter. Do I mostly vote Republican? Absolutely. But do I think the Republicans are part of the problem? Yes, because when they have majorities in, you know, the executive or both houses of Congress, they don't roll anything back. You know, it'll be like a 0.2 point 0.2% tax cut for some dude who's super rich, or the normal people. You know, it'll be like something to satiate the masses, like, oh, you know, the GOP is doing so great, when it's like, they're not, they're never undoing the progress going forward, right? Hurling us off the cliff. It's always just like smoke and mirrors to make people think like they're doing something. Now, at the local level, and there are some people who are doing good work, but I think as a party, yeah, they're part of the problem, because it is a uniparty. I mean, they're all just moving us forward off the cliff, you know, off the nihilistic cliff. That would be the cliff I'm speaking of, the nihilistic one that is anti-child, anti-family, and anti-God. And then what was your question, Adam?
Why do you think all that's become so in vogue again over the past 10, 15 years?
Gosh, that could be a whole podcast, but I mean, I guess one, people separating themselves from God. I think that's one of the biggest things. And identitylessness. Everybody needs an identity.
Community as well, right?
Community and identity. Who you are, where you came from, what makes you who you are, you know, why you tick the way you do, you know, just, it could be ancestry, heritage, or whatever. So when we're told historically that America as this thing is white supremacist and horrible, and is this cancer that has to be shed from the planet, but you have ancestors and you are a part of the thing that made up this quote unquote nation under God. So you're told that you're bad, but you're told that you have to be a part of this thing, or else you're a bad person as well. It's very disconcerting for people, and they don't know where they are. They don't know where they've come from. And I think that has not only to do with like the tearing down of history and telling certain people that their heritage is bad when other people's are good, but also the way we live, that we don't live near our families. You know, you can have kids and your kid lives in California and New York and Pennsylvania. And, you know, I'm part of this too. I'm from Virginia and I live in North Carolina. Now I'm only 3 hours away from my family, but it's one of those things. We're so disjointed and disconnected from each other that I think feeding into, it's so multifaceted. So it's God, lack of identity, and everybody needs identity. You have to know what you are, otherwise you're just dust in the wind. And I think that's why people glom onto, I guess this would be the second part of the answer, glom onto whatever the identity is, being a Wiccan, LGBT, marrying the dog, you know, the dog marrying people, they probably have an identity, whatever, you know. And it's because people are so atomized and lonely. And I think that's the fabric of it. And it's a very knotted, disjointed fabric, but there's a lot of things going on, but I guess that's a pretty good overview.
Yeah. My friends have a podcast. It's a husband and wife, and they started talking about like how, you know, the nuclear family, how it's being destroyed and broken down, and how that's an awful thing. And then they are like, wait, the nuclear family maybe was the PSYOP, the traditional family with like the grandmother in the house.
Yep.
And, you know, mm-hmm. having kids early and, you know, that whole generational cycle of everybody yep. being involved, like that's the way that it was supposed to be. Like, even if you needed to go away for a couple of years when you were 18 to 22 and then come back, you know, and it seems like that's, you know, I don't live, you know, I grew up with my family in a different state from my grandparents and the rest of the family. And I live in a different state from my whole family now. And yeah. And like my parents institutionalized themselves. Like they live in like retirement communities. And I was like, you know, that doesn't have to be the way that it is. Like,
yeah.
And it's what they want. It's sad. And, you know, I'm an old guy now. I made some really terrible life choices from the time I was a young person up until, you know, my mid thirties. And I don't have kids yet. I want to, but it's getting harder and harder. And it's I lived on this big piece of land that would be so nice to be able to pass on to generation. And then I'll be the first to admit, like I'm, you know, I grew up I came of age in the Bay Area, and bought into all of it. I got tricked, you know. I went and got the no kids surgery and then had to get it reversed. You know, I got it reversed,
Oh, wow.
but everything doesn't work the same, you know. So who
Right.
knows what's going on. And that's like the biggest regret of my life. So it's hard, but yeah, I can see why people get, sorry about the phone ringing in the back. I still have a landline because there's no cell reception here. But I think about it's why that ideology is so attractive when you're a young person is almost like, I know you probably you came from kind of ANCAP libertarianism probably, right? And have evolved a little bit from there. It's so easy to get, if you have like a weird autistic logical brain, to be like, oh, this is so awesome. Like, I'm always right, and it's so much easier to like tell everybody else they're wrong and not have to really do anything like that. And it's almost like that's what you can do, like when you're 19 years old and you're yelling at your uncle at Thanksgiving because, you know, he says something about affirmative action or something like that. I kind of equate those two things together, but yeah, it's definitely wild how it's but all the stuff with Rachel Wilson and all the occult feminism and stuff like that, it makes it seem like it's been such a long con, you know.
Yeah, and she knows all the occult stuff more than I do, but you know, I would just say that I think it that the anti-family stuff. Well, first let me say that yeah, the nuclear family is the foundation, but from it, you know, springs out the multi-generational family. So like I wrote a piece a couple of years ago taking on David Brooks because he was bemoaning the nuclear family and touting how great the multi-generational family was. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it was like a sleight of hand thing because meanwhile, his entire article was like pro-LGBT and how, you know, family is how you define it and all these kinds of things. So he was really trying to undo the family unit and the multi-generational family unit while saying something that's correct. Do you know what I mean? Like taking this truth that, yes, we can't all just have a nuclear family, you know, we have to have something that goes beyond. We have to depend on each other, you know, and have all these steps in the process where grandmom is, you know, helping change the diapers of the grandbaby and all these things. And other cultures have this and seem to be much happier than Americans are, you know, and not as atomized and not so lonely and not all on Zoloft or whatever. So he was taking this grain of truth, but really attacking the family at the same time. So, yeah, I mean, I guess my point on that would be that feminism was just one of the attacks on the multi-generational family and the nuclear family, right? They're the same thing. I mean, you need both to have them function, I think, as best as you can in a perfect world, in a world that has as few distractions and that is pro-human as possible. I think you need to have both. And I think feminism just chipped away at all of those things, you know, getting women out of the household to work, not just, you know, Rosie the Riveter, you know, for like the war effort, but to get out and to work and to equate like the cubicle with freedom as opposed to being a mom and a homemaker and, you know, the kitchen, so to speak, as, you know, the selfless, self-sacrificial thing you do for your family because you love them. So it was all like, again, the occult stuff. I know it's there, but I think it was more just, government seizing the opportunity to be like, aha, we can have steady workforce, you know, we could still have people having babies, but you know, maybe they won't be having as large of families as they used to have, so we can still be, you know, having taxpayers and
Yeah,
dutiful voters,
doubled up the taxpayer.
right? So
Yeah.
more taxpayers and all that kind of thing. So you know, I mean, like Gloria Steinem, like I used to read Ms. Magazine, and, you know, I loved Anita Franco. And when Anita Franco was, you know, on with Ms. Magazine, she was like, that's the only magazine I read, you know, so I was all into that. But I mean, Gloria Steinem was paid by the CIA as well, and she was beautiful. And one of the reasons she was chosen is because she was beautiful, and people, even feminists, wanted to hear her talk, not Andrea Dworkin. You know, nobody wanted to listen to Andrea Dworkin, even though she said a lot of things that were correct, but she was not pleasant to look at. So some of it is absolutely a psyop. But on the flip side of that, too, people don't have to go along with a psyop just because it is, you know?
Yeah.
That would be my critique of any red pill thing. Okay, these people do this thing and they stink and we don't need, you know, they've created this horrible problem for the world. Well, okay, but we also don't have to do what those people say, you know? You know, like I talk a lot about, you know, I go off on Yankees, right? Well, I mean, Southerners don't have to do what Yankees say either. So Southerners have a lot of blame as well, because just because somebody tells you some ludicrous idea doesn't mean you have to do it. So part of that's part of the psyop, though, I guess, right? You know, wearing people down to make them think that whatever the thing is they're asking, being asked to do is normal.
Right. Deborah, you got to stay home with the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you chose to, and then you you had a job for a while, but your job was at the elementary school
that they went to,
which is probably was probably really nice to get to see the kids at school.
Yeah.
How did you feel about being a stay-at-home mom in you know, the what early late 80s to early
early 80s?
Early 80s.
Yeah. Oh,
your
I'm
daughter
sorry.
Was
yeah.
born in 1987.
87. Thank you. Yeah, things just sort of happened. It wasn't planned. The company that I had been working for a very long time was going out of business, and it was close to the holidays, and it just didn't seem like the right time to be out, you know, pounding the pavement looking for another job. And we had been trying to get pregnant, and as soon as I stopped working, and that kind of, I don't know if that it was a stress reduction that helped, but anyway, I became pregnant. And so my husband and I agreed, well, why don't you stay home and we'll see how it goes. And so I, you know, was home until I have two daughters. My younger daughter was in first or second grade when I went to work at the school that they both went to. So I felt isolated before my kids were born because, you know, it wasn't the norm. There weren't a lot of women walking around without a job. And at least in, you know, where I live, it just didn't seem to be. I never ran into anybody.
Even moms of young kids.
Well, I, you know, I wasn't hanging out in those places, I guess, you know, where I met moms, which was a lifesaver for me, was walking with a stroller.
Yeah. But you didn't have any like good friends that had new babies or anything like that at the same time?
No, not really. We had just moved into this house. So I was new in the neighborhood, didn't know, you know, the neighbors yet or anything like that. So it was, you know, I took myself to classes, you know, I did a aquatic exercise class for pregnant women and stuff like that, hoping, you know, I'll get to know other women. And it just didn't happen until I had my kids. And then.
Well, that's what I'm asking about when you were at home with your kids.
I loved it. I loved it. I was walking on air.
Yeah. And you got to do that. You went back to work when your younger daughter was in first grade, you said?
First or second, yeah.
Yeah, but you got to like stay in their lives.
Yeah.
And I
was home in the summer, you know, when they were off of school, I was off.
Yeah, and you probably got to leave school at the same time as they did and all that.
Yeah, Yeah, so didn't have to, worry about making arrangements or childcare or any of that stuff. I was with them.
Yeah.
And this is in where was this
In the
area of?
San Francisco Bay Area, north of San Francisco.
Now, did people ever give you grief? Oh, you're a breeder. What are you doing? Don't you want to go to
Think
work?
so. I don't
That's
think
good.
so. Yeah.
That's
It's
nice.
a pretty affluent area, Marin County, California. So
Okay.
it's the county that's right across San
Yeah.
Francisco
That's
from
where
the
Bob Weir lives. I know all about
Yes. Yes.
it. All I
sorts
used to be
of,
in love with
and
Bob
so
Weir.
did Jerry Garcia for a long
That's
time.
right. I have been to a Oakland Alameda Coliseum, if that's still in existence, if it hasn't been torn down.
No, it should be torn
It
down, but yeah,
is. I
it's
don't
still
know what they
there.
call it now. They,
Yeah.
change the name according to who buys it and sponsors it, but I don't
I
know.
made my pilgrimage out to San Fran a couple of times in the day. Beautiful, very beautiful.
Not anymore.
It's different now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really different. Yeah, but no, I staying at home with my kids was just a gift.
Yeah.
That's
Nowadays,
wonderful.
when you hear about stay-at-home moms, what's your thoughts?
Lucky them.
Yeah. You support it? You think that it's good?
Oh, absolutely. Of course I do. Of course I do. Yeah.
Yeah, I do as well. I was lucky. My mom stayed home with us until I was in high school, you know. So, I guess we can move on, Rebecca. What do you think? When did the atheism start to go away?
I think that was part of the package in college. I was raised by, I guess, a nominal Christian family. We believed in God. I went to parochial school to like second grade Catholic school. My grandmother had a rosary, that type of thing, but it wasn't, very God-centric, so to speak. We weren't discussing it. We were being good people, following the golden rule and all that kind of thing, but it wasn't a lot of talk. So again, that sponge, when I went away, it made me question everything, so it's interesting though, when I was an atheist, I was always so angry at God, oh God, why do you do this and that? So that's very common among atheists that they still believe in God. Otherwise, why would they be so
Yeah,
angry
why?
at
Yeah,
this
I've got
guy,
a
right?
I went to I was pretty active in 12-step meetings for a long time, and they would have in the I was doing it in Oakland, California, and they would have atheist AA meetings where all they did was talk about God.
Huh,
Yeah, so
interesting.
yeah. And but when did what I wanted the question was when did you stop being, start going back towards some sort of Christian spirituality?
Right. And this kind of goes to the occultism thing too, that I can't speak to the detail like, Rachel can, but I think part of the feminism, there's a lot of paganism within that. Goddess worship. Like I almost got a tattoo once that was like, going to be a goddess holding the globe and all this kind of thing. So it was going to be like environmentalism with my feminism. I did not get it, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things. It's kind of a package deal. There's a lot of stuff going. Can there be a feminist who's a Christian? I guess. I don't know. I would like to have a discussion with that person. But so that was a package deal. So when I started coming out of my feminism was when I was coming out of my atheism. Well, I met and fell in love with a great guy. So and we got married in the year 2000. And it was one of those things that, we were playing house and, being a husband and a wife. And there was, we tried to split things 50-50 and all this kind of stuff. And we went 7 years without having kids. And that's one of my great regrets, that I wasted all those years. I could have had more kids or had kids younger, because I didn't have my first kid till I was 36. But, those things started happening in concert, right? So as I'm leaving feminism, I'm leaving atheism, you know. And I always joke that people like switch so quickly now, like, oh, you know, they were a hardcore leftist, and then, you know, 2008 they discovered Ron Paul, and now they write for the Mises Institute or something. You know, like these people have these like quick, you know, round turnabouts now, but like mine took me decades. But yeah, it was just being married and thinking about what marriage is, and hey, are we going to have kids? And hey, I kind of want to have a kid, and you don't, but I do, you know, and just figuring out all this thing, and what's the point of this thing called marriage, and what are we even doing? So those things were happening together. And when my husband and I decided like we need to have kids, we were already thinking, hey, this Jesus guy sounds pretty cool. And we had some friends that were kind of busting the, you know, the whole kind of like narrative we thought about Christians, that, you know, oh, he's just stupid, backwoods, you know, not intelligent at all. I mean, that's just what we thought. And we met Christians who were none of those things and weren't beating us over the head with the gospel, but were there to answer these questions. And it's a deep well, and you just keep asking question after question after question. Then you start reading the Bible and the scales come off and you realize, hey, this is real. This is something, there's nothing more important than it. So that was happening as we're deciding to have kids. And then parenthood's a life-changing thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because you have to be self-sacrificial. You know, I mean, you just have to be, you have to put other people's needs ahead of yours. And I hadn't done that for a really long time.
And yeah.
So that's a Christian concept, right? So it was all happening at the same time.
Yeah, that's so nice that you were able to talk to people who are like willing to just answer questions and be there. It's that whole attraction rather than promotion thing. And before you got on, Deborah and I were talking about, I'm getting into that. Have you ever read Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis?
Part of it. We started reading it as a family and never finished it, but I do need to finish that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have like a weird autistic libertarian brain, it's a really good book for you.
Yeah.
But
I think because we were reading it with our kids, they were just kind of like, what's going on? And then I put a bookmark in it and never went back. But yeah, I do need to finish that because I know it's like total bucket list book.
Yeah. But what I was saying around that is that it's, you know, he was an Anglican, and he makes it very clear at the start of the book. It's, this book isn't here to like debate the different versions of Christianity. And I was telling Deborah like that since I started actually, you know, went back to church and stuff, or started going again to a new place. And the biggest turnoff for me is people that want to like argue with you about different versions of Christianity. I know there's a place for it. I know if you're like Jay Dyer and wanted to do debates and stuff, it's fantastic, but it's one of the things that bums me out the most about it. And yeah, just having people that like support you and are there for you when you are like, I'm from, you know, I spent 25 years in the Bay Area before I came back to Oregon. And it's like it's looked down upon in the Bay Area to say that you're Christian unless you're like a Mexican or a Black person. Then then people wouldn't say anything to you about it. But if you were like a white person in San Francisco and you're like, oh yeah, I go to church, like people would make fun of you and say mean stuff to you, you know? So it's like, it was really, really hard for me to go back. And then I kind of like spoke out about it on the show and talked to you about it and go to being really interested in orthodoxy and talking to Buck and then meeting some of his friends that live here and going back. And then so many people jumped me and were just like, oh, that's that's the wrong way to do it. It's the wrong one to go to. You need to do this. They're like quoting all these Bible verses and everything on why I'm wrong and all this stuff like that. And it's just like, man, just that's the kind of thing that really, really turns me off about it. And it, you know, I would never do that to anybody else, but.
So these were Christians telling you like you were taking the wrong path?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And when did you kind of start making the turn and considering orthodoxy?
So when my husband and I decided, like, okay, we're going to read the Bible and start going to church and figuring out this whole Christianity thing, we were going to be Protestants. He was kind of interested, sort of like he was open to Catholicism, but because I had grown up with it, and there are wonderful Catholics in the world, that is my disclaimer, but the ones I knew, like in my family, were not nice. So I always just like held this grudge like against Catholics.
Yeah,
So we were going to be Protestants.
I went to Catholic school and yeah, so it was off the table for me.
Right. I was
I
just
went
like,
I,
ah,
yeah,
no.
where I went to
So
I went
anyway, keep going.
Oh, I was just gonna say like everything that the Catholics have been famous for in the past 30 years was like going on around me. So, you
Right.
know, like
Okay.
yeah.
So,
So
and I was, we were kind of like getting into like our libertarian phase, which is like uber individualistic. So we were like, you know, let's be Protestants, you know, let's go do this thing. So we did a variety of different types of Protestantism. You know, they met our needs for a while. It helped us. I mean, that's a whole long story. There were some places we went where you couldn't ask questions, and you know, like hardcore, like conservative Baptist churches that were great on so many things, but like we were had all these questions because we were new Christians. So that was weird. And then we kind of went to like the, you know, hipster skinny jeans pastor type places that, you know, were like 3.5 point reformed Calvinist or whatever, and met our needs at these places, you know, and then they would do something crazy. So anyway, we just started realizing like this isn't about like meeting our needs. This is about feeding us. You know, this is about healing us because we're so broken. And it seemed like, and you know, everything's political. I don't want to say that you can never get political as a Christian because breathing is political, driving a car, having a baby, that's all become political, right? But they started kind of going down the woke path. This was like 20, you know, 15, 16. And we would just put up with the little things here and there because overall we're like, okay, this is good. You know, we're learning, we feel like we're growing, all this kind of stuff, but it just kept happening over and over and over. So it was actually when the Southern Baptist Convention, which was the church that we were going to, was under that umbrella at the time, they banned the Confederate battle flag. And you know, I don't think you know, like an American flag should be even be in a church, you know, there should be icons and you know, crosses and things like that.
only an Israeli flag. That's the only kind of one that
But
should be in a Protestant church.
I'm like, you know, if Joe Bob's, you know, parish or, you know, congregation or whatever has an American flag sitting right beside, you know, a Christian flag and he wants to have a battle flag, well, daggone it, that's what he could do. So the point was, it was becoming like, this was really when the anti-Southern hostility was, it was like just before Charlottesville, like it was becoming very vogue, very entrenched and extremely hostile. And you know, at that point I was becoming more and more Southern without apology and understanding more about American history and where I came from and how important the South was to the United States of America. And I was just like, it was just, I was done. I was just like, I'm done. You know, I was pulling my Gandhi where it's like, I love Jesus, but Christians, I'm just over them. They're just getting on my nerves. I'm just done. And so my husband and I thought about like starting a home church and all this. Like, we know nothing, you know, but it's, we wanted to commune with Jesus, but churches were just going nuts. And it was during that time he discovered Orthodox Christianity. We went for the first time. Actually, he took my oldest son for the first time. They immediately fell in love with it. I, on the other hand, was like, it's too Catholic, all these candles and incense. What is all this? But then it only took me a couple times, and I just started listening and reading and diving into that deep well. And then we were chrismated on Christmas Eve 2017. So once that probably started like early 2016. So it was like a 2-year process. about of leaving Protestantism, making sure like we weren't just being like, Protestants always are like, church jumping, they tell you like you're shopping for just the right one, that like the pastor doesn't tee you off, or you like the hairdo of like the worship leader or whatever, that people are, we wanted to make sure like we weren't being quote unquote too Protestant about it. Like that's what people would say. So we were like, this has to be a very serious decision. And so it happened. And we, took the catechumen class and learned a whole bunch and are always learning. And that's the whole point of it, right? That we can never know everything because so much of it is a mystery, but we are very at home in Orthodoxy because, I mean, I think it's a great spiritual home because I think it is the true church. But I would be happy if anybody's going to a traditional church at all and not being an atheist. I will say that.
Yeah. What was the experience like in your town finding an Orthodox church?
There was actually an English speaking parish 40 minutes from our house, which is not bad.
Yeah, I drive an hour. So
yeah,
hour
we drive
minutes.
An hour now too. There was a hubbubs over COVID and such like that. But where we live, I mean, there's Rogue Corps parishes, there's plenty of Greek parishes, English speaking Rogue Corps parishes. My church is one of those. The other
are
we
most
went to,
are most in Latin?
No, no Latin. Russian, Greek.
Russian and okay. Slavonic, yeah.
Okay.
So Rokor. There's actually a closer Rokor parish, but it was all in Russian and Slavonic, and we didn't want that for our kids. Plus, there's a whole thing. Some people are like, it's, the Holy Spirit's there. It doesn't matter. I mean, I've been to Russia and gone to churches that were obviously not in English, and it is beautiful. And if you know what the liturgy is, you can follow along. And I absolutely believe it is a holy space and the Holy Spirit is present there. But I also want to hear the homily in my own language. I want to hear the gospel reading in my own language. I think that's important for people, St. Nicholas of Japan, when he moved to Japan, he had to learn Japanese, that's because people want to hear the word in their native tongue. That's my belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's Ethiopian churches that do it. And, there's African Orthodox churches. Deborah Rokor stands for Russian Orthodox Church outside Russia. There's a big, long history about that goes back to whole bunch of stuff that I've heard probably just a quick version of, but yeah, they're kind of more the hardcore Russian type churches, right?
I'd say generally speaking.
Yeah. My church is in a organization called OCA, I think, mm-hmm. the Orthodox Church of America. So that's what I go to just because it was the one that Buck Johnson gave my number to his friend. His friend called me and said, like, come to church. So
that's what we had been in that jurisdiction. So actually in my area, right where I am right now, there are two English speaking parishes within an hour, which is pretty good. Cause I mean, the parish I'm at now, it was a mission. I guess we're still technically a mission. I'm not sure when something goes from a mission to being an actual parish. But anyway, we're growing and thriving. We just bought a building. It's wonderful. But we have people that drive like an hour and a half. A young couple that drives from like 2 hours away and they get an Airbnb on Saturday nights to go to Vespers and then stay the night. You're lucky when you find something that you really think is, dogmatic, in line with tradition. So people will drive very, very far to find a parish that meets their, not just needs, but where they feel home, where they feel like it's the hospital and they're getting the healing that they need. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw how in your, old were, oh, go ahead, Deborah.
How old were your sons when you started with the Orthodoxy?
Okay. So this was, let's see, 2016. I got to do the math. My oldest son was, am I doing this right? Hold on. My math stinks. I did not major in math. 9. And uh-huh. my twins were 8. So like 8 and 9 or 9 and 10, something uh-huh. like that. And my twins are 14 now. And is that right? Yeah. My oldest son is 15. Yeah.
Do they still go with you to liturgy?
Mm-hmm. They're altar boys.
Oh, wow. Do they enjoy it?
They actually do.
It's amazing. Yeah. I've talked about it on the show before. That's the one thing I love is just seeing all the kids at church. And like, it's long, Deborah. I don't know how long yours is. Rebecca, ours is, you know, right there around 2 hours mm-hmm. for just the liturgy. And there's so many little kids that are like, you know, I mean, sometimes they're loud and stuff. They're allowed to just be there running around and stuff. But the fact that they can get, I mean, I remember having to sit through, I think Mass was an hour long when I would go to, when I was Catholic. And it was horrible. It was so hard to get through. And then these little kids are like sitting there for 2 hours. I mean, they bring toys and coloring books and stuff like that and are like kind of running around together. But it's amazing to see, it seems like they really, really enjoyed being there and seeing the people seem to like express their love for their children more than I've ever seen anybody do it while they're there at liturgy with their parents or with their children. So it's really, yeah, really beautiful to see.
Speaking of like, you know, multi-generational, we actually have quite a few multi-generational families at our church. And it's, if you have young kids at your parish and you hear the sound of a baby crying during liturgy, to me is music to my ears, because those are the future Christians, you know? I mean, those are the ones who are soaking it in through osmosis. And, you know, to see like a grandma pick up her child and have it like kiss an icon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's yeah. pretty awesome. And yeah, as far as my boys go, you know, serving in the altar, they love it. You know, it's a sense of purpose. It's knowing what's happening. It's being responsible. It's really, really cool. You know, I had one of them wanted to do it years ago, and the other two were like, we don't want to. And then they saw how much he was into it, and they got involved. And I mean, I love it. I really love that they are so much of a part of it.
Yeah. I saw on your website that your patron saint is Ilya.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about her?
Ilya is actually a man.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know you could do that.
Well, the priest that I came in under said it was fine. My current father confessor said, I probably wouldn't advise you against that, but you know, whatever, it's okay. He's actually, his wife actually has a patron saint who is a man as well. So it's not like some big hill to die on. Nobody's losing their mind, but, yeah, it's interesting. So, I chose Ilya, Saint Ilya the Righteous, the patron saint of all of Georgia. I have no Georgian ancestry. I just found his story, and he's a modern saint, Ilya Chavchavits, that his story kind of spoke to me. Now,
when did he repose?
1907, I think. He was assassinated by social Democrats. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Just imagine Sanders out there murdering people.
he fought for the history and the faith and the borders and the language and culture of Georgia, the nation of Georgia. And so I found that fascinating, because I was like, hey, I want to do that. You know, I try to do that. And a lot of people tell me I'm a mean person for doing those things. But hey, here's this saint guy who does it. And he was sainted. I mean, he was canonized. So that's pretty cool. But I like that because he was very learned, you know, wrote literature. Like I said, he was a historian. He came from a very well-to-do family, but he used his time and effort to fight for his people, for the Georgian people, against Russification. And because that was the time where they were trying to, you know, push, like, you know, Russia needs to be the main language there and all this kind of thing. And I love Russia, you know, I love Russian history, but and I love the Russian people, but you know, the people of Georgia wanted to speak Georgian, you know. So I just found his story really interesting. And then when he was assassinated, his wife, who was a very devout Orthodox Christian as well, she forgave his murderers and actually said, I don't want to seek the death penalty for them. And it's hard to find stuff on Ilya, that's not in Georgian. I've tried to find as much written in English as I can, and there's not much. But I think that one of these assassins came to Christ after that. So a very fascinating story, and that it's modern and happened in these tumultuous times, you know, this progressive era and communism battling fascism and fascism battling the social democrats and, you know, America coming to be this great power. It's I just like that point of history. That's just such a fascinating early 20th century, as so much was happening and has such relevance for us today. So that's why I chose Ilya. And I would love to go to Georgia someday.
I just became officially a catechumen,
Awesome.
and I chose Elder Cleopa of Romania. And he lived 1912 to 1998. And so he went through the hard times in Romania. And he actually like had to live out in the woods and hiding for like 10 years and all that stuff. Did you ever listen to the Martyr Maid podcast?
Yeah, once or twice, yeah.
Did you listen to the one about that 4-hour one about the Bolsheviks? It was
Death of humanity, or is that what it was called?
anti-humans.
Anti-humans.
When I was talking to the priest about, he asked me who I wanted, and I asked him, I said, is I have sheep and pigs and stuff like that, and I said, is there a patron saint of shepherds? And he's like, oh, I've got a good one for you. And he like went and took me out to the bulletin board outside of his office, and he's like, that's Elder Cleopa of Romania.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was a shepherd, you know, and just the fact that he was Romanian and made it through all that stuff, and I'd been looking into all that recently, and yeah, it worked out perfectly. There's a good book on there's like the saint book on him called Shepherd of Souls. So his story was that he was at a monastery in Romania, and he was a real quiet guy, so everybody thought he was just a dumb guy. He never talked. I'm pretty quiet too. And so they elected him the abbot of the monastery because they thought that everybody else thought that they could kind of run roughshod over him because they thought he was kind of this dimwit guy. And then like eventually came out and like just started preaching to him and speaking for like 4 hours straight, no knew everything just because he'd been an avid reader and came from such a pious family. And so he became like well known and had like 200 pilgrims a day would visit him and want to come talk to him. And so yeah, I'm reading his little book right now, and yeah, it's pretty cool. So
Do you have any Romanian ancestry, or you chose him just for his shepherd connection?
I chose him just for the shepherd connection, but I've always been interested in Romania. I was telling my wife today, Deborah's daughter, when I in 1994 there was the World Cup in the US. My dad took me to Sweden versus Romania. So it was 94, so it was like right after, you know. And I've always been interested in Romania. I was a history major in college, and I think I wrote one of my big you know, final thesis papers on like Romanian orphans and just how hard of a place it is.
Isn't that interesting how that pieced back together, like that you threaded that needle, you know, just from your pre-suggestion, but that is like that's fascinating how that was, it's coming together.
Yeah, it was really touching when the priest introduced me to the rest of the parish, you know, at the end, and everybody like came up and shook my hands. It's like Romanian couple came up, and they're like tiny, tiny people. They have two little kids, and they have like real thick accents, but they introduce themselves, and they're like, "We're Romanian, you know, these are our children. They were born here," but they just seemed like so like almost like honored that somebody had picked a Romanian saint. So
yeah,
it was really, really, really cool. So
yeah, I think it's neat too that you know, there are some subversives in Orthodoxy that say, you know, Americans getting into Orthodoxy, you know, it's this foreign religion, what are they doing, it's all cosplay and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, the saints are everybody's, you know, I mean, they are our spiritual ancestors. And so it's just an opportunity to learn so much more about all of the history of the place where you've chosen a saint from. You know, it would be like if a Romanian chose, you know, an American saint or something, you know.
Yeah.
I just think it's such a beautiful thing.
How does one become a saint? What is required?
A lot of work. I don't know exactly what it is, but it takes a long time. I think throughout history, there have been a couple of people who are just like immediately sainted, you know, like people are like, yep, this is like a done deal. But there are canons and rules that people have to follow to canonize someone. And a lot of times there's pushback for said saint, you know, political reasons or, you know, whatever ecclesiastical reasons. But you know, it's a very vetted process, but I don't know exactly what it is. That would be, you get Jay Dyer on, he'll know all about that.
Yeah, I've
but I do tried know
to get
that
him a couple times, he won't return my messages.
Yeah, it's a lengthy process for most people who are canonized. Yeah,
yeah, that's, but the cool thing about Orthodoxy, at least to me, I think it's cool. I've mentioned it to some other people that I know who thought it was very, very strange and maybe not right, is that yeah, somebody that died in 1998 can already be a saint. Mm-hmm. So it's people of my lifetime, you know.
Yeah, well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a good place to hang it up. It's been a fun talk. Deborah, do you have any final questions or anything?
A million questions, because I know so little about the Christian religion. I was raised in a family that was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And when Adam was talking about how it's so nice to hear the kids running around and babies crying and whatnot, and I was remembering back, and I'm sure it was this way for most kids who were brought up in any, you know, church going religion, that you needed to sit there and be quiet and behave yourself, and how painful. I mean, I remember it just being painful. So why would I want to do that? I just dreaded it. Have, you know, every Friday night going to services. And it's sad.
That's interesting. Yeah. Orthodoxy is a blend of, I mean, it's not wild, you know, I mean, nobody's going crazy, but it's a, at least the parishes that, you know, my parish and the ones that I've been to, like in my area, you know, it's this balance of, well, we want the kids in here. We don't have children's church where, you know, like in Protestantism, you cart them away and they go to their children's church and watch VeggieTales or whatever, you know, or make popsicle stick art or whatever they do. But it's this balance of they're there and they're children, you know, there's nowhere to sit. You know, I mean, like my parish has some pews because we bought a an old Methodist church. But I mean, those are for like sitting for the homily or for like older people or if somebody has a cane or something. But you understand, you're realistic. Like these are little kids that need to be standing for 2 hours. So there are rules, but they're realistic, you know. So yeah. And then, and if you go to a parish that does have lots of littles, you know, again, it becomes their identity. You know, they look forward to seeing their friends. They look forward to doing the rituals together, you know, to see them all gather in line to receive the Eucharist, and they're all there, like all together, all little kids. You know, it's a joyous thing. So I would be shocked if any of the like even really small kids at our a parish dreaded going to church, you know, and I think that is part of the beauty is making it accessible to everyone, you know, from the tiniest baby to the really old person that's, you know, needs to take a load off, needs to sit, you know. But it's a balance and it's not supposed to be torture, you know.
Shouldn't be.
Shouldn't
Yeah.
be.
I don't think I knew any kids, you know, when I was going to Catholic school that enjoyed church. I don't remember any of them, so.
Yeah, and I'd say, you know, I knew a lot of Catholics growing up. You know, like I said, I'd gone to parochial school, and even though I ended up going to public school, I just knew a lot of Catholics. There's just a lot of Catholics in my old hometown, and I don't remember anybody talking about it like with joy, you know. And I think a lot of them fell away from it too. God willing, they're back in church, but you know, it was not something people seem to talk about warmly, having to go to Catholic church. Yeah.
It's
Well, I think that's a good place to end, guys. Rebecca, this has been really good, really informative, and then
very,
good
very.
talk here at the end.
Well,
So
thank you. And thank you for putting up with me in my overalls and just looking horrible. But this is the real me, y'all. You got to see
yeah,
it.
it's good enough for us, so.
Thank you for having me on. It was really enjoyable. And I would love to not only have you on, Adam, Deborah, I don't know if you go on podcasts either, but I could
She
have both of
does.
you on my show.
Yeah, we'd love to come on anytime
Yeah. Thanks.
that you're desperate for guests. Let us know. We'll be
Okay.
there. But yeah, Rebecca, go ahead and tell everybody how to find you.
DissidentMama.net is probably the best place. You can get my podcast there and check out my essays and my Twitter and all that jazz. I've got a YouTube channel, but I'm probably going to get kicked off as well. But I also have an Odyssey channel. But everything's just, I do like, you know, a blog post of when I have a podcast or something. So you can find all the links in there. But DissidentMama.net.
Yeah. And then you did a real good panel talk with Buck a while back with some Orthodox priests and taking down the or talking about the NPR takedown. That was fun. So yeah, once again, thank you so much for everything you do, and thanks for talking to us. We really appreciate it. So hopefully we get to talk to you again sometime soon.
Thank you. Stay safe out there on the left coast.
Yeah, we will. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Love
Thank
y'all.
you.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass to lay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots. Playing God all day, deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites, Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're gonna be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.